Today we're gonna interview Jaden Vu. He's the founder of Black Peach, which is his company. And you know, he basically does high ticket sales. He helps a lot of entrepreneurs learn how to do sales using social media. And he's also featured on Forbes, Entrepreneur, Yahoo Finance, and other publications. So, do you want to kind of explain just where you're from, Jaden? Kind of your story, how you got into what you're doing today.
Yeah. Oh, that's a long-winded question. So my story was I grew up in Toronto, so that's I guess the east side of Canada. So shout out to anyone that is in Toronto. I started my journey growing up as a chef. I've always wanted to be a chef. So I spent a good years of my time cooking in the kitchen. I did that for a while, and then I got into acting, and then somewhere along the line, I got hooked into sales. And I don't know if any of you guys out there watch like Wolf of Wall Street. So there's this specific scene with like Leonardo DiCaprio and Jonah Hill, and they're sitting at the restaurant, and then Leonardo DiCaprio just pulls up on his nice, I think it was a Porsche, and Jonah Hill is just, you know, this fat, raspy guy. He just walks over and is just like, "Hey, nice car." Long story short, he was just like, "How much money you make?" Leonardo DiCaprio's character showed him a pay stub for making, I think, about $75,000, was it? Don't quote me there. And he's just like, "Okay, I quit my job. I'm gonna work for you." So that kind of scenario was kind of like almost identical to what I went through. I just knew someone that was in sales. They got me hooked onto it, joined an agency, and thinking that, you know, sales would be easy, which it wasn't. It was like far from the fact. So a couple months went by. It was tough. Long story short, it was not easy at all. Failed numerous times, and then I got super serious probably around like the 5 month mark. And yeah, everything took from there. Studied from the great Brian Tracy, Zig Ziglar, Grant Cardone, Tom Hopkins, and pretty much any sales guys out there. And then next thing you know, I became one of the best performers in the agency. So that's a little bit of my background.
Okay, and so you said you first got started into sales. Was this right after you went to college, or right after, like, did you go to high school, college, like the normal route? And like, what was your
No, man, I actually am a high school dropout.
okay? So
Yeah.
what tell us about that. Like, why did you drop out, and like, what did your parents think, and like, why did that happen?
Great question. So, I mean, there's numerous factors why I dropped out. One, it being just like a personal mental condition. I was suffering from depression and also abandonment. Just a little background. I don't want to kind of dive into it too much, just for, you know, personal reasons. But anyway, so yeah, I suffered depression, and I didn't really get along with my high school friends. So outside of not being academically gifted, told myself school was not for me. I wanted to pursue cooking, so pretty much I decided to kind of just drop all of that and get into cooking. And it was literally like, yeah, I almost could have finished school, but the thing is, it's just so tough. And yeah, that's what happened. And never went to post university. Just worked my ass off. Spent my whole life in sales, and just dabbled, you know, dabbled with the entrepreneurial side of things. And I guess I'm here where I am today. But yeah, never finished school. Didn't really thought I needed it.
So what did like your parents say, like, when you dropped out? Because you know, usually your parents are probably like, you know, you got to do the traditional route. What did they say when you dropped out? So did you drop out as like a sophomore or a junior? Like, what?
So those terms don't apply in Canada, but I guess in
Oh, okay.
American terms, you would.
What did they say in Canada?
What is the 11th year? What is that, a sophomore? Like when? Sorry, the
That's
fourth
a
year.
dude. I think the last year, you mean? The last year?
The last year. Sorry.
That's senior. Yeah, but
Okay.
that I think that's 12th grade. I think that's 12th grade, yeah.
Yeah. So senior. It is. There
Oh,
we go.
okay. And then
Yeah.
your mom or dad, did they know, like, or did they say anything about that, or?
Well, that's the thing. I had a really tough relationship with my family growing up anyway. So I ran away from home. I didn't really have much communication with sophomore or senior year. So I didn't really have a good relationship with my family anyways. So they didn't really care too much. So.
Okay. So like, so you left high school and you ran away from home the same time you dropped out of high school?
Sorry?
So did you, you said you left home after you dropped out of high school?
No. I left before. I ran away home before, yeah.
Okay, okay, well then, that makes sense, because if you run away from home, like, how are you going to go to school, right? How are you going to go to school, and how are you going
to... Well, I was still going to school. I just dropped out because mentally I couldn't handle it anymore. And then I realized what I wanted to pursue at the time. Academics didn't really have, you know, any huge impact on what I wanted to do. So
okay, for sure. Yeah. Well, yeah, man. So I guess things were probably rough at home, which I could relate to. I mean, I didn't run away myself, but you know, growing up, there's a lot of instability in my family, and that kind of. And yeah, I mean, you know, latchkey kids, you know, there's a lot of kids who are just, parents are too busy working, or they're just, you know, they don't have time. But, you know, I don't know the whole situation for you, but maybe for those, you know, watching or listening too, they could probably relate. Maybe they don't have parents who are always there for them, or, you know, had that kind of guidance. But that's kind of amazing that you kind of went from there to kind of forging your own path and kind of creating this business, right? So you were, well, how old were you when you left, and then where did you escape to? Like, where did you run to? Like, where did you stay? Like, you know, things like that.
Yeah, so I just bounced from couch to couch. I begged friends, distance, family members, and it was tough because I didn't really have the money to rent my own place, so I was just bouncing from home to home. There'd be even times where I slept on the streets. Sometimes I would sleep in the car when I finally got, you know, some money to get a car. So it was tough, man. Like,
so, yeah, I mean, like I want to go through the process, because, you know, now obviously you're, you know, successful, and a lot of people probably look at you and they're like, wow, like, this guy's been featured on all these magazines and he's selling these high ticket, like, tens of thousands of dollars of worth of programs. But, you know, so after you left home, at how old again? So that's around like 12 senior in high school would be
like 17.
17? Yeah, 17. So then, like, you know, what was your first gig that you did to make money? You know, because obviously if you're living couch to couch, it's like, you know, you got to find a way to provide for yourself, you know. So what was that?
Yeah,
what was the first thing you did? And then, yeah.
Yeah, like I was saying earlier, I wanted to, like, my biggest goal growing up at the time was I wanted to be a chef, right? So I was already working part-time while going to school, just as a dishwasher. When I was pretty much bouncing from home to home, I was still working in the kitchen. And then I worked my way up from a dishwasher. You know how the tiers work in the kitchen is you would start from dishwasher, cook, prep cook, line cook. So line cook is pretty much people that cook on the actual, you know, kitchen itself for the restaurant. And I work my way up to what's called a chef de partie. So that's someone that manages a specific station, then sous chef, and then head chef. So that was pretty much what I was doing for income at the time. And it doesn't pay a lot. Just to give people a perspective, anyone works in the kitchen at all, you should really understand that it does not pay well and it's long hours.
What's the pay like, just to give people an idea?
Yeah, just to give people the perspective, it's just like, I'm not sure exactly how it is now and how much different in terms of how it pays, you know, in 2020 as opposed to back then when I did it, like, a couple years ago. But you would make literally maybe $100. It's called a daily wage, $100. And you would work for like 12, 13 hours. So you're pretty much working below minimum wage, right? But that's exactly how the kitchen atmosphere works. Now, I'm not saying ill will or bad about the environment. It's great if you love what you do, and it's not about the money. So for me at the time, it was not about the money. So I didn't really care working less than $8 an hour, right? But then somewhere along the line, when I started to really understand that, one, I live in a super expensive city, And also, two, I was always living paycheck to paycheck and not being able to afford, like, just decent things. Like, I had to struggle to even take someone out on a date. So I realized that I had to find other sources of income, whether it's I take on two jobs, two restaurant jobs, or I switch industry entirely. So that's what I was doing. And then when I racked up enough money, fortunately, I was able to get my own place. But still, where I live, Vancouver, in Canada, it's one of the most expensive cities to live in. And when I got some money to get my own place, still living paycheck to paycheck. And then that's when I realized it was time for a change. I needed more money. So I started chasing the money now as opposed to just chasing the passion.
Sure. And that's when you got into sales, because you're like, I need to find a way to make money quick, right?
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, I wanted to become an actor because actors do make a lot of money, but I didn't realize how much time you have to put into that. So I did that for a while. I also did some directing. So I did a whole bunch of things really before I went to sales, just here and there, because I wanted to explore. I just wanted to explore what options out there that I could, you know, be capable of, because I was never academically gifted. I was visually gifted in the sense that I can do things what I see and I can pick up things real quick. That's why I got into cooking. So yeah, I got into acting, and then it wasn't a while until I met that friend that I was mentioning earlier, that he pretty much just showed me his pay stub. Look, this is how much you can make. Just join my agency. Completely hyped up, burned all my bridges, and just left everything behind, put down my knives, and then just jumped into really an industry I had no knowledge of. Like, coming from a kitchen where you scream and yell at people, and you're always like, you're always on edge, and you're always upset for no reason. Like, it was a very toxic environment. And I'm sure most restaurants are better now, and that not every single restaurant was like that. I guess it was just the ones I was at the time, but going from that into sales is completely different. I mean, the one thing I know is you cannot sell anyone if you don't smile. And for the life of me, I cannot smile.
Because you said you used to have depression, right?
Yeah.
Like that. And so, yeah, like, tell us now on, like, you know, what it takes to do sales. Like, you know, how are you able to do high ticket sales now? And what are some of the, like, things that you've learned over the years that have been really difficult, but now you're good at, and maybe some things people watching can learn if they want to get into sales, or maybe they're already doing sales, like, how can they?
Yeah, great question. So I'm not really sure where to start, but I would start off by saying, if anyone wants to get into sales, if you're already doing sales, there should always be three golden rules that you should follow by that I had a hard time understanding and that I live by now when it comes to sales. Is one, always smile. I mean, that's with anything in life, right? You start channeling and manifesting positivity, and positivity goes a long way in sales. Two is know your numbers. So what know your numbers mean is that you got to understand and break down how to really work backwards of what your financial target is or what your actual objective goal is in that specific industry or that specific product. So for example, let's just say you're selling cars. And you want to sell 5 cars a month, right? You want to break down in a sense that, let's just go by a weekly basis. You need to sell about one or two cars in 1 week, and then the rest is just once a week. And if anyone is in the car industry, selling one car a week is pretty tough depending on the brand you're in. So breaking down exactly what you want to hit and working backwards is very critical. So, you know, how many calls does it take to get one car? How many people you got to talk to? How many closes or presentations you have to do to get that one close, knowing your own track record? And then the third golden rule for sales for me is really understand how to close. So when I was in my early journey as a sales individual, I never took closing seriously. It was more of an attitude. It's just like, okay, if they like the product, they'll say yes anyways, right? But over the time, after getting proper coaching and mentoring and reading a lot of books, the closing process is completely different from any other process. It's literally a whole process within itself. And if you truly want to make money, if you can just master the closing process and everything else is kind of average, you can get pretty far as a sales individual. So those are the three things I had a really hard time understanding. And they're not specific order, but as long as you follow those three, you'll get very far. Just literally living off those three golden rules.
Sure. So, I mean, that's, you know, it's easier than it sounds, right? So, like, what are some, like, like practical tips when people are talking that you use for sales, like tactics, you know what I mean? Like, because you gave us like the framework, but is it like, are there like specific things you could do or say, or you said smile, I smile all the time, things like that. Not in a creepy way, but, you know, just like, yeah. I mean, any other things that you're like, man, I wish I knew this when I started off so that like I could really, you know, propel myself as a salesperson that helped you.
Great question. So, I mean, tips and tricks for number one is pretty straightforward. Just smile, right? Like everything you do, right down from the very beginning to the very end, you smile. You smile when the customer says no. You smile when you're having a bad day. You smile whenever. Literally, if you have to put on a fake smile, believe me, obviously the last thing you want to do is be dishonest with your emotions. But I've seen so many people lose sales because they don't know how to smile. Like the worst thing I would see, like training people at the time when I was in the agency, is when they hear the word no, they completely shut off and they stop smiling. And that energy feeds off to the customer. And trust me, customers, they live by energy.
Yeah.
So smile if you get rejected a couple of times. Smile when you don't get what you want in the discussion. Smile if the customer is asking too many questions. Just smile. Number two is pretty straightforward. Just figure out what your targets are. If you want to make $1 million in 1 year, you break that backwards of how many products you want to sell. So $1 million is about $83,353 a month. You break that down even more to what I call reduced to the ridiculous. You break that down into weeks, that's about $20,853 every single week. And you break it down by the total days you work. So if you work, let's just say 6 days a week, that means you have to make roughly about $2,300 a day. And then let's just say you sell, you know, products that are $500. So every single day you need to sell about five, six products.
Okay. So that's kind of how you break it down. So that's kind of what you did with your company, Black Peach, right? And can you talk about a bit about what's your main company about, like who you serve and what you do with that?
Yeah. So Black Peach, really originated from helping people understand the high performance levels of selling digitally and also just traditionally. So I did take a huge change. So just wanted to throw it out there. So it kind of started out really my idea with Black Peach was to teach people how to sell digitally just because in light of COVID, right?
That's why I got more.
And y'all say, oh.
Yeah. Oh yeah, she left, so it's cool.
Okay. Yeah. So when I first started Black Peach, it was just really to help and take advantage of what happened because of the pandemic, right? Because a lot of brick and mortar or a lot of businesses that don't fully utilize social media to sell, just literally just to post content for the sake of posting content or just to have, you know, an awareness around their company, but they don't really utilize it to its full capacity. I wanted to have Black Peach be that, you know, that buffer, teaching people how to not only grow an account but really taking those leads and really nurturing it from being cold, warm, and hot and closing the actual deal itself. So that was the main mission. But after working with the clients I currently have, I noticed what they want more out of and what generates results faster is literally just teaching them the, you know, the high performance levels of sales. So now Black Peach is pretty much teaching any individual, whether you are completely new, intermediate, or advanced, there's always a couple of things I can teach you about sales to not only 10x your sales, but also teach you how to be a better human being. Because at the end of the day, sales is not really sales. It's just really caring about people with the most with your moral compass aligned correctly and really helping them find a product or service that benefits them so they can do better in life. It's like one of my favorite quotes, Zig Ziglar. Is if you can help enough other people get what they want, you can get everything you want in life.
Yeah, I remember he said that. And so, yeah. So you came from, you know, wanting to be a chef to doing sales and now having like your own company and your own products. Like you came a long way. And so that's, you know, how long has it taken? So 17 and you're right now, how old are you right now?
26.
Okay, so it's been around 9 years. Like for that process. And so I think there were some someone asked, you know, how much money have you spent on coaches and mentors as a self investment? Want to answer that?
How much money? Too much.
Yeah.
North of six figures, I'll tell you that.
Wow. North of six figures, so over 100,000 for sure.
Well, then, there's no specific number because I don't remember the specific number, but I know it's north of six figures.
Yeah. And then Mike asked, you know, what books were helpful in learning high ticket sales?
Well, I'm actually revisiting this one. It's I've read this numerous times. So for anyone that's in sales, Zig Ziglar is the man. This guy sells authentically and generally, so he's not your typical, you know, I would say what the best word to use is. He sells from the heart. Anyway, so it's pretty much Secrets to Close the Sale, closing the sale. Great book. Other books that I've read is The 10X Rule by Grant Cardone. How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. Very great book.
Yeah, sure.
And okay. Another one is, what is the one I'm sitting up there? Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss.
Yeah. Never, what was it?
Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss. Great book, little background by the author. He is an FBI negotiator turned business owner. His company is called the Black Swan Group, and what they do is literally they just teach people how to influence and negotiate a deal without giving anything in return to the opposing party.
So they negotiate a deal and the other party, they don't get anything from it?
Yeah. So for example, let's just say you watch like a CIA movie, right? If you ever see those negotiators, like FBI negotiators or interrogators, their mission is to always get what they want without giving anything back. So it's just like, I want the hostage, but the people that kidnap the hostages, they want like $5 million. So the FBI negotiator, their job is to get the hostage badge without either giving anything in return or giving literally little to none. And the book teaches you what he does to always never give anything back.
Wow. So do you have to lie to do that? Or like, what are some things that you've learned from that book in terms of negotiating? Is that too much?
You don't lie to people, right? I mean, people are very smart. They can tell when you're lying. More so like understanding the underlying root of why someone is doing this, right? The most famous story in the book was when he got a call in the middle of the night, and these Americans were in the Philippines, and they got they became hostages, and the person that took captive of them is a very like big wolf, right? This guy's everywhere. I don't really remember the name. But I highly recommend you pick up the book. So these Americans, they got kidnapped, and literally the first thing the kidnapper says is like, I want $10 million or I'm going to cut these guys' head off and I'm going to record it. And I'm going to put it on every news channel. And that would be a huge, you know, it would be a huge global issue, or not global, political issue, sorry. So anyways, long story short, over the course of 3 months, he was able to really negotiate the entire deal with a diplomatic who's the general in the Philippines to negotiate with the hostage taker. And long story short, he was able to get back the Americans. And the guy who kidnapped them called the diplomatic and said that if they haven't promoted you, they should, because I don't know what you did, because I would have never let these guys go. And through the course of the 3 months they were negotiating, he was able to really identify the underlying root of why this guy's doing this in the first place.
Okay.
So you're trying to find those pain points of why someone's acting the way they are. And if you do, and if you can relate to it, they typically will be more understanding, because they're going to start treating you as a person and not as a salesperson or as an enemy.
So he basically got to understanding the person holding them hostage and was able to kind of talk to him and be like, hey, like, I mean, I'm just curious what was his pain point, or how did he diffuse it, you know, or, you know, what was the thing he said?
Well, it was a combination of things. One is being patient. Mm-hmm. Two is your tonality. So the book goes through it. It's just I would love to sit here and list it. It's just certain information that I don't remember word for word. But the one big thing that really triggered him to calm down and not make any more threats was really asking him, why is he doing all of this? You know, like, what made you come to this point? And actually listening and taking that information that the person's saying and reflecting it back on them. So for example, let's just say I asked you, why do you do what you do? And you told me, I do it because I want to save the world. I'm like, great, you want to save the world. How big do you want to save it? You go like, oh, well, I want to put in charities. I want to have clean water. And I'll ask you, okay, great, you know, you want to have clean water. That's amazing. A lot of third world countries need more clean water. But why is that really important to you? You can start telling me, oh, because I grew up with really bad water. I couldn't really take a shower without worrying because it'll hurt my skin, or because I drank sewer water because we were in an area that didn't allow for clean water, so I was sick all the time, and it really upsets me because there would be times where I would have, you know, just died because of all these bacteria or whatever in that water. And I'll start pressing on that and pressing on that, and I'll start for you to be open and vulnerable. And when you become vulnerable and you're not worrying so much what we say, you start to trust me. Yeah. And then when you start to trust me, that's when I can go in for the kill. In the sense where I was just like, what I wanted originally from you, now it's easier for me to get it from you.
Yeah. I mean, which sounds not manipulative, but it's just kind of you building trust because you're sharing your story, right? Like when you shared, you know, the part of like, hey, I had abandonment, you know, I felt abandonment as a kid, like in high school, like I relate with that, you know, because there's times when I felt that way, right? And, you know, there's times when I felt like I was forgotten too. And it's not, you know, always because, you know, I mean, I realize now, like no one has perfect parents, right? And no one has a perfect childhood, but it's like what you make of that and what you do from there that makes you who you are. And so you obviously used all that pain and to create something good and meaningful and productive, you know, whereas some people can use that pain and turn to just destroying their lives and other people's lives, you know? And so I think I just want to acknowledge you for doing something great with that pain. And so do you, you know, now that you've had success and things like that, do you still keep in touch with your parents, or do they know that you're doing well and whatnot, or is that not something that, yeah, you touched on yet?
It's still a sensitive topic. I'm still working on it. It's not a clear path. It's been very rocky. It's still rocky. And just this point in time, I don't really want to touch so much on it because it's a very sensitive topic.
Yeah.
But every day I'm trying to work on it. I do miss them dearly. And part of my why and part of my mission, why I do what I do, other amongst many other reasons why I do what I do, is the biggest one for me is to just be able to win back my family somehow.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I definitely think that will happen, you know, one day. I mean, you're, you know, I think, you know, you're doing so great for yourself, right? And it's like, and you've done this on your own, which is, I mean, obviously with the help of other people, but, you know, it's, I mean, I'm sure things will turn out for the better for you and for what's going on. So yeah, man, you know, I feel like a lot of people can relate to things that you've said, you know, whether it's about feeling like, feeling abandoned maybe, or maybe it's about wanting to drop out of high school, not seeing the point in school, and you kind of learn for yourself, you know, how, you know, what you want with your life early on. So I think that's really important. And in a way, you could even say that it was a blessing, right, that what happened, right? Because if this never happened, you never ran away, you would have never built your business, you would have never been making the money you are, you can't be impacting the lives you have. So in a way, even though what seemed was bad, it actually turned out for good, you know, or you made it turn out for good, so which is awesome. And so I think for those listening too, you know, that whatever situation you're in, you could take that and change it, right? And so, yeah, man, like the big reason why even starting this podcast was to give people hope and to hear stories like your story and to have hope and be like, you know, if someone like Jaden can do it, then like I could do it too, you know, and give them that hope. And so obviously people can, you know, find you at on Instagram, and they could chat with you after if they want to connect. But, you know, I want to talk about, you know, so with the pandemic, you're helping a lot of your clients get high ticket coaching using social media, right? So for those who
are can I pause here for a second?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. I just want to because I just realized that something that a lot of people might be wondering too, based on what I said earlier. So I'm going to chime in real quick. I won't spend too much time on this. So earlier when I said that, you know, I started out doing what I did in cooking for the passion, and then after I realized it was, you know, I was living paycheck to paycheck, and it became me just following the money. I want to point out there that passion is very important. And also you need money as well. And sometimes passion and money doesn't go hand in hand. But what I notice now based on everything I went through is it's okay sometimes to really just for the short term, just chase after a money opportunity in a sense where it's an avenue that allows you to really make a certain uncapped amount of money. And then you can go back to your passion in a sense that now you have the financial resources or capabilities to really spend more time on that. Now, my passion is just helping people, and that's what I develop. And that's the other funny thing, too, sometimes is you might think you only have one passion, but we are evolving creatures. We are perpetually changing what we love, what we do, and how we look at life, is that you always develop new passions, whether it's through something that you thought you never love or something that you want to go back to. But just what I'm trying to say is money never leads. Money always follow. So in the short term, you can chase for the money to go back to what you want to do, but just don't make it all about money, because when you have money, and if anyone that has money can tell you humbly and generously that it, no matter how much money you make, it doesn't make you happier. It's more important who you spend it with and how you spend it to make an impact. So just wanted to really throw that in.
That's good. Yeah. So do you still have a passion for like cooking and stuff? Like, do you think you ever go back and, you know, cook and be a chef and whatnot?
I wouldn't make that my full-time job. I'll tell you that, but like, I love cooking. I cook for my partner and, you know, sometimes friends and family, and, it doesn't feel like a chore because I don't have to wake up going like, okay, you know, when I cook for an hour, that's when I get paid. But it's more like I do it because it's fun. I enjoy it. So there's less stress. Would I ever go back to being a chef? No. Would I like to start my own restaurant? Yeah, that's probably in my goal book, but definitely have nothing to do with the restaurant. I just pretty much open it and just, yeah, let people run it. But.
Awesome. And so, okay, yeah, thank you for sharing that. Because I think, yeah, a lot of people, I think, say like, yeah, follow your passion. But if you're not making enough money with that, then obviously it's not going to be enough to sustain you, right? And live a decent life. And so, okay. Yeah. And for those of you guys like watching, you can still ask questions and things like that. But you know, what is the vision like for your business, like who you want to help and your plans for the future?
My vision for the business is to literally work with as many people in the world that suffer from confidence and suffer from the ability to really speak up for themselves, because sales is not ability or a trait that you grew up with or born with, right? But the funny thing is we've been selling our whole lives in a sense, and no one really notices. Like when you want a cookie from your mom or dad, you're selling yourself, telling them why you want that cookie. Or when you are when you're chasing after the girl or guy, you're selling yourself, because like that probably be the hottest girl out there, hottest guy out there, and there's probably like lines up of people asking them out too. So how do you stand out? Like what do you do? And many other, you know, parts that you're selling for a job interview, for whatever the case may be, you're trying to, you know, not get fired. So what I'm trying to say is like we grew up selling our whole lives. It's just that we haven't really noticed it as selling. And the funny thing is, even though it's not a trait that we're born with, it's a trait that we can learn and also master. Because, yeah, once you master that trait, believe me, you'll go very far in life. Because in order to do well in business, it's all about influence and negotiation. And that just roots down from learning how to sell like a champion. So my goal with it is to really help people to tap into something that they've been doing for years, but really break it down into a science. And get them to be better at it, because, you know, if you know how to sell yourself better, you get more project deals, you get more money, you'll win more in life in general. So
yeah,
that's my vision.
So I am I am Ed Sedos's sales is life, and yeah, that's true. So, and I think it's so true because you know, to give you guys background, like, you know, sales is still something I'm learning, and it's so true. If you're not confident in yourself, it's really hard to sell because you're like, who am I to sell something for them to give me money, right? And so, you know, what were some of the limiting beliefs that you had about, you know, when you first started sales, and you know, I'm sure there's a lot, right, of whether it's low confidence issues. Like, can you kind of explain what were those beliefs that you had and how you reprogrammed it, how you got out of it? Cause that's huge.
Yeah. Well, the biggest one for me was, it's always like the money issue, right? In the sense that people, who are you guys? Awesome.
we're entrepreneurs.
we're an entrepreneur. Thanks for tuning in, Courtney.
Podcaster. This is an episode on my podcast we're going to upload.
My name is Jaden Vu.
My name's Raymond Don, and I'm a podcaster. It's like Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah. So going back to it, the biggest disbelief I had really in sales or just growing up is there was no way I can make more money than what I'm making right now. There was no way I could become a millionaire, multimillionaire, or billionaire. It's just because when you think of those numbers, especially in the kind of environment I grew up, it's just like for the movies. It's just like, that can't be me. It's just like, you know, there's a reason why the rich gets richer, because they're doing something right that I don't understand. But I never really stopped myself to sit back and just wonder, okay, you know, the rich gets richer, but how can I figure out a way to understand what it is that they know? And how can I make that for myself? So I never really thought to think of it that way. So for the longest time, whenever I got into sales, the more money I made, the more scared I get. In a sense that there was no way I figured that I can make this much money. There was just a point in my life when I was in sales at the agency, I made more money than what I would have made in 6 months cooking. And that was a huge pivotal moment for me to realize, holy crap, money is actually easier than you think. And then after having that taste of, you know, like money flying in, and I was making a lot too. And it was also surreal. Like, I didn't believe that this was happening, because it was one thing to see that check that the person was showing me how much he made, but it's also completely different, you know, universe to actually have it happen to you in some sense, right? Because I was used to making like $2,000 a month. Mm-hmm. And now seeing that I can make mid figures in 1 month, it's just like, it doesn't make any sense. I couldn't comprehend it. So anyways, after a while, I started making more money. My disbelief in becoming a millionaire or multimillionaire became, you know, literally, it just completely vanished and it disappeared. And once I stopped limiting myself to believing that I can't hit that mark, everything I did after that, it just kept skyrocketing. It's just like, I made more. And it became one of the best performers in the agency. And I made the fastest, like, $1 million in the agency. And it was insane. So anyways, that was one, really telling myself that everything I want is completely possible. Nothing is impossible, only if you want to believe it. It's like Henry Ford says, whether you think you can or you can't, it's true. And as soon as I kind of like stop that mindset, all the doors would open. The second thing that became a disbelief was that I was never good enough. So I grew up as a very, like, you know, reserved child. And part of my little family didn't really give me enough support for me to flourish. And it's not their fault. I never really say it's their fault. I don't know what happened, but I always blame myself. And it's a lot easier when I think like that, because then it makes me want to improve myself. And it's not point blame. So like never thinking I was good enough. So everything I did, I always gave it like 75%. Because I felt like if I gave it the extra 35%, that I would be just fail miserably, and that I would just want to stop. And if anyone is watching out there, if you're an entrepreneur, a business owner, or just someone that wants to improve in life, you know that failure is part of the journey towards success, right? All the success you have is paved in a path of failures. So I was definitely afraid of giving anything 100%, because I was so risk adverse that I didn't want to just completely jump all out there. And that didn't stop until, sorry, you're going to say something?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was going to say, like, for you to blame yourself and be like, you know, I don't know. I feel like that can also be a little negative, because if you're just like, hey, I'm just going to blame myself for, you know, my parents not being there for me, it's like, then I'm the problem, right? And so I don't think you were the problem. I just think that maybe they, you know, weren't ready to be parents. You know, a lot of parents are not ready to have kids, but they just have kids, and a lot of times their kids are the ones who suffer from that. And so, you know, I just want to let you know that, you know, there's nothing wrong with you. You know, I don't think it's because you're the problem. It's maybe they weren't ready, and you know, sadly you didn't get the love that you needed as a kid, but in a way you kind of, you know, built up self-love, which is the most important thing, right? Because there's kids who have perfect families, right? But then, you know, they end up, you know, getting addicted to drugs. They get, you know, they live like a totally almost opposite lifestyle of what their parents taught them, even though their parents seem to have had everything. Whereas for you, it's like you almost had nothing, right? And you had to build from scratch, but you made something of yourself. And that's, I think, way more admirable than someone who just had everything comfortable and easy and just kind of wasted it. You know what I mean? Because there's a lot of people who they have, you know, wealthy parents, they have good, you know, families, but, you know, they don't have any ambition. There's no passion. There's no, you know, purpose, right? Or there's no, like, you know, there's nothing to live for, right? And they just, you know, end up wasting their life. Some of them, not everyone, but, like, you know, so I think in a way, it's cool to, just to help you, instead of, because that framework is like, man, I'm the problem. But it's like, no, like, they just weren't ready, and, you know, but you made something of it, so that's awesome. And yeah, man, I hope and pray that one day, you know, your parents, you will be reunited, because that's huge to be connected back to your family, because family is the thing that we should look at and be like, oh, this is like the safe place to go. But for you, you kind of created that on your own, which is amazing, right? And so, you know, just to say that, like, that doesn't give anyone an excuse, right? Like, whoever's listening, watching, they're like, man, I have, you know, you don't understand, Jaden. Like, you don't know how my dad abused me, or my mom left me, or, well, it's like, well, look at my story. Like, you know, like, I was abandoned, but look at what happened to me, right? And so it's like, you're the one in control of your life, and don't be a victim. Like, don't blame other people, but take responsibility and create the life you want, and which is what you've done, right? And so I think it's cool to see examples like this and be like, wow, like, that's someone I can model after, right? Because people need people to look after and model. And so I think that's really awesome that you're being that kind of example for people, whether you know it or not, you know? Like, even for the listeners here, some of them were like, earlier, they were just like, oh, like, save this live. Some of them were like, save this live. So obviously they like hearing, you know, your story. Hello, me, Hanyang. And so you guys can ask questions, you know, for those of you guys still, you know, tuning in, you know, feel free to ask questions. And
they say save the live. Yeah, not lives.
Yeah. And so, yeah, man, this is good. This is actually good content, right? That needs to be put out. And so yeah, man. I mean, well, you know, aside from that, you know, what, you know, so let's get back onto the social
aspect. Yeah, and I appreciate you sharing that. It means a lot. And I just want to also clarify that, like, I don't really blame myself in a sense where, like, like, there was something wrong with me as a child or anything like that. I blame myself in a sense that maybe I didn't work hard enough as a son, because my family is very traditional. And, you know, I wasn't the perfect child. That I already know, and that I've accepted. But I'll just blame it more of myself. It's just like I didn't want to work hard enough to work on myself. And it's subjective as well, because I was young. No one really thinks of it like that, you know, growing up. But just some part of me just wished that I cared enough to be the best son possible. And I was not the best son. So that's where the blaming comes in, because I did a lot of stuff that I regret.
So. I see. Well, yeah. On another note, so you know, you're on social right now, and a lot of people are using social media for business. Like, what are some of the best ways to grow now on social? That you would say, or that people could use social media you know, for their business or for what they're trying to do?
Yeah, it's a long-winded question, but I'll try to keep it short. So the first question was, how do they grow on social?
Yeah, like what are some of the best ways to grow now on social, you think?
Yeah, so I'll give you everyone watching out there 5 steps. One is to really identify a platform that you resonate with or you would want to really master. Don't try to be the jack of all trades and really go into every single platform all at once. I mean, you can't really, if you want great results, you can't divert your energy, right? So you can't be going into YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, TikTok, whatever platforms out there and expect to knock it out of the park, right? I mean, in one side, consider split testing, but also the same side, like think about it, you're dating 5 people at once. Like, do you think you find a meaningful relationship like that? Probably not. So stick to one platform, and then once you master that to a certain degree that you feel comfortable being able to take on another one, then you move on to the next. Or if you have the money, just go hire a bunch of people to do it. Step number 2 is really identify your mission, what you want to stand for, what kind of impact you want to be making on social media. Don't be just like everyone else, you know, those really stupid photos showing off this nice Rolls Royce or Lamborghini or you taking a trip to the private jets. Like, a lot of people could see through that, and that's not a mission. That's just trying to show off, and no one really want to follow that. And if people do follow that, those are the people you don't really want in your life anyways, or, you know, those are not true supporters. So don't be caught in the whole glamour game, and just really identify your mission on social media. So whether you want to become, you know, the next life coach or the next e-com king or queen, whether you just want to, you know, focus on giving some kind of, you know, certain advices or something that you're really good at. So just identify what your mission is. 3 is be consistent. So this is like just life in general. Be consistent at social media. If you want to grow, you just have to stick with it. It's not something that you would literally work on for the next 3-4 months, give it your all, and then slow down and expect, you know, the results to keep climbing. It doesn't work like that. With social media, it's like a second job or a third job or a fourth job. You have to be consistent with it, and you always have to be understanding the trends. And what I mean by trends is like if there's going to be new updates or if there's going to be new features on it, use it all you can, because when something is new out and you hop on the trend, it increases your exposure. So just be consistent when you hop into a platform.
What would you say are the current trends right now on social?
The current trends right now, great question. That's the one thing I'm lacking on. Okay. I'm not looking into current trends, so that's one advice that I need to take for myself. But I know with Instagram that a lot of reels are great because it's new. They adopted that to TikTok. It's just not my jam, and I don't know if I'm going to get into it, really. And also understanding how the algorithm works. So one great tip, for example, you provided to me that actually works is posting 10 minutes before the hour, right? So that's
before the hour?
Yeah, before the hour. So that's a great tip. A couple other tips as well for trends is a lot of people like to stay within the 7 to 15 hashtag mark. Apparently that really works because it helps increase your algorithm exposure. And another thing is to constantly do stories. So the more stories you do, the more engagement you get, and a bunch of other things. So those are the things that I noticed.
Good turn. Awesome. Cool. Yeah.
I got 2 more. Now, number 4 is, post, educational content. So what I mean by post educational content is if there's a specific target market, which you should already know because you identified your mission. Step number 2 is, you want to literally post only things that give value to your target audience because it gives them for a reason to come back. So if you're going to be a sales coach, trying to really focus on your content, and my measure or my rule of thumb is 70-30, so 70% value and rich content and 30% really just focusing on your lifestyle, right? You also want to kind of show what kind of person you are and also let them know that, you know, you're an actual human being, right? Outside of just work. You want to have that work, you know, life balance kind of on social media. So you want to post value and rich content that can make a small or big impact in someone. So for example, if I'm in sales, I just recently posted one going over how to close more deals. And that's just completely free content. And what that happens is if people believe what I say, they'll start getting more curious. So they'll come back from my page for more content, or they might take me up on a program. But my goal is to literally just help educate other people. So that's tip number four. And the last tip I have is never sell. Try to stay away from selling to your followers. As soon as you start trying to be super promotional or super advertising or just completely salesy, they will kind of really shut off and tune away from you because they feel like every time they come on, it's just you trying to get them to buy them something. And you can't get someone to buy something on social media if you don't build trust yet or credibility, right? Mm-hmm. So without the credibility and trust, you're not going to get very far. So try to really stay away from being super promotional or salesy. Over time, really the best people on social media are the ones that really just focus on number four and never post any promotional content and then have the customers come to them.
Okay, so basically don't ask for the sale, just kind of provide value and then they'll come to you like when they need something pretty much. And
what you still want to ask for the sale, right? Because people need to be told what to do. That's one thing I know about sales, and it's universal, is people like being told what to do. It's just like, you know, why do you tell people to click the button below? Why do you tell people to subscribe? Yeah. So you still ask for the sale, but you don't want to literally be so promotional. Like I would never post anything on my feed about, oh, I have 50% off on this. I would do it in my story based on my, you know, rapport what I have with my my audience and also how much value I'm giving, right? But I'll never really just go completely promotional. But you always ask for the sale as well because people need to be told what to do, right? No one likes to make a decision. You have to tell them to make a decision.
You have to tell them, hey. So I mean, you said, so when do you do that, right? Because you just said, hey, just don't ever sell. But then they also need to be told what to do. So when do you know when to do that sale, right? You know.
Yeah, great question. Yeah, so that's actually a really great question. I'm glad you brought that up. So let's just say, for example, you're just focusing on posting, you know, focusing on number four and you're only posting educational content. When people start reaching out to you, leaving a comment, you want to start building rapport, identify what the pain points are. So what I mean by identify the pain points is just like, how would what you have benefit them? What kind of problem would you solve in their areas? How many problems could you save with your product in their lives? So that comes from building rapport. So if they DM you, if they leave a comment on your post, you want to start building rapport. And a lot of people, they get super lazy on Instagram. I guess this should be tip number six. Tip number six is you want to engage with your audience. Get to actually know them. If you want to build a loyal fan base, if you want to also use Instagram or even any social media platform as a venue to monetize, you want to actually be more customizable to your audience. So getting to know them, build a rapport, and identify if your product can actually genuinely solve a problem in their lives. And then once you identify that by being genuine as possible, then you ask for the order. So for example, like, would you like to make more money? Are you a low performing sales individual right now in your industry? Would you like to be better? Yes, I would. And how long do you know closing? I don't know much. Great. I have a solution to all those three for you.
Okay. For clothing. Okay. So kind of goes from ask them what they want and then, yeah. Or there's one thing that says give them what they want. Sell them what they want, give them what they need. There's that one too, right? You just hit on the pain points, things like that.
Yeah, sell them what they want, give them what they need. Yeah, because people, and it's another thing, it's a funny thing you brought that up. I was actually talking to a colleague of mine that is, especially in sales or just in business in general, how people market is always preying on what people want. And then once they actually hooked, you focus on what they need. Right? Because people never want what they need. They always want what they want. So it's just like people don't need an iPhone 12, but they want the iPhone 12.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
So you sell the iPhone 12 and then they end up getting into a self-development course or something.
Well, in a sense, like if you sell the iPhone 12, then you can start selling them on like certain apps to really help them. Or, you know, I don't know. It's just a random idea I throw out there. But like in my case, I sell people on the fact that they can make more money by being better at sales. That's what they want. Everyone wants to make more money. But what I'm actually giving them is what they need is the fundamentals of how to break down from everything from the pitch down to the closing, right? No one really cares so much about that. They only care about how can I get better every day or how can I make more sales? How can I be the top performer? In order to get that, they have to go through the process of being a better salesperson. They can't just go from zero to one.
Yeah, it's a process for sure.
Yeah.
Cool. So we're going to wrap it up now. Last couple of minutes. Just want to thank you for everything you've shared. And And obviously, people can find you at Jaden Boo on Instagram. People want to. Is there about? Oh shoot, there's more questions here.
What's the question?
Wow. Well, it's on Facebook, but you know, how do you balance transparency from Penny? How do you balance transparency with your personal life enough to be relatable to people that you want to impact? Is there a boundary?
Yeah, great question. Is there a boundary? That entirely depends on you as an individual. Like how much you want to share, how open you want to be. There's no perfect answer, right or wrong answer. It really just depends on, you know, why you would want to open. So for example, I started Instagram or social media in general to open up about my depression, to help other people that may go through it, because depression is a big topic and it's a never ending topic, and many people suicide all the time. You know, Korea and Japan have the biggest suicide rate. It's bigger than people overdosing, and it's sad because it's them taking their own lives. So that I started opening up about, you know, things most people wouldn't open up about, because that's something people keep them to themselves. But there are all other things that I keep to myself because it doesn't really relate or it doesn't help my mission. So I guess the more tangible answer I can give to your to that person asking the question is define what your mission is, and whatever that mission is, what you want to share has to really be working towards that mission. So letting people know that you like broccoli is not going to help you. If your mission is I want to be a life coach, telling people you like broccoli or that you fart at night, or when you fart, you know, you wake up your partner, that has nothing to do with your mission as a life coach. So it all really depends what your mission is.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, it's Penny, that was a great question. How do you balance transparency? What's up, Carlos? With your personal life enough to be. So yeah, and I think it's up to you, right? You know, Jaden just shared things about his personal life, about, you know, things he went through, parents and whatnot. And so it's how like open you want to be. But I would say the more open you are, the more relatable, like especially on social, the more people can relate. And, you know, how many people are out there talking about, you know, depression or about, you know, suicide or about abandonment, but overcoming it, right? And so, you know, those are things that people need to hear. Obviously, if you're still depressed and you're like, hey guys, I'm depressed still, then, you know, maybe that won't help. But like, you know, if you've had depression, you know, because I've had depression as well, then it really helps people to relate and be like, wow, like these guys were depressed, like these guys who are like going live, like no way, you know. But it's like, yeah, like we're human beings, right? Just like anyone else. And so and so, you know, the final question I have is, if you could go back in time, what words of encouragement or wisdom would you give to your younger self, right? And these are things that obviously now you're like, you know, you've had success and whatnot, but you know, what are some things that you would tell your younger self that you wish you had, you know, maybe for someone out there who's running away from home today, or, you know, someone who feels abandoned, or someone who's just feels like no one's there, like what would you tell that younger Jaden today? Like any words of encouragement or wisdom to that younger Jaden or anyone out there who might be feeling the way you did back then?
I want to first off saying great question. And also second, I am not a regretful person. I don't regret anything that I went through to get to where I am, because all the adversities brought me here. Not saying if I had a better life, I wouldn't be here, but I just know that I don't regret anything I went through. It helped me build as myself as a character. But to answer the question, there's so many things I would say to my younger self, but two important things I would really go back and tell younger Jaden is, one is, if you're going to fail quick, learn and move on. Because I have the tendency to really just be so fixated on the failure that I don't really focus on anything else. I don't focus on what I can do better, how I can improve. It's just more like, what happened here? Why this, right? Why this happened to me? So part of any success is just learning how to fail quick, learn and move on. I will tell him that. And the second thing I'll tell my younger self is, really, in order to speed up, you have to slow down. So another part of me is I love to move fast. I have a sense of urgency, and all these character traits were built in the kitchen, because in the kitchen you have to move fast. There's no time for errors. If you do have errors, then you're gonna look like the laughing stock. Like, people will call you names, and you know, it was they will make you feel like shit if you screw up. So I always moved fast, and I never really took time to, like, even analyze anything, you know, like, not analyze to the point where I'm paralyzed, but analyze enough so I know what I'm getting myself into, and having at least some kind of context or information before I dive into. But that was never me. I was just kind of like dive, and fail as many times as you want, you know, became demoralizing. But then when I started to really just, you know, take a breath, slow down, figure out what I actually need to do, I actually moved a lot faster if I was to literally just kept running, you know, at full speed. So that's one big advice I'll tell my younger self, or for anyone in general, really, is in order to speed up, you got to slow down.
Slow down. Yeah. It's like the turtle beats the hare, right?
Exactly.
So for sure. Awesome. Well, yeah, guys, thanks for listening. You know, thanks everyone for hopping on, and we'll save this and share this on my podcast, and also have this on, have a clip of it too. But yeah, you guys can check out Jaden at Jaden Vu on Instagram. Blackpeach.com is his website. Anywhere else you want people to follow? You have a YouTube channel too, right?
So I would say my two main platforms that I'm active on is Instagram and YouTube. YouTube, there's a lot more informational content out there. So if you want to just watch, you know, videos of how to get better at sales, what to do, what not to do in sales, you know, head over there. It's literally just at Jaden Vu, or just type in Jaden Vu in YouTube and it will pop up. But yeah, cool. Those are two
awesome. Okay, man, well, thanks so much, Jaden, for the interview, and you know, we'll be in touch, and yeah, man, we'll definitely move forward together and see progress for sure.
Yeah, appreciate it, brother.
All right, see you.
Yeah.